Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Get ready today, guys, because we're going to be talking about morals, your conscience. What's going on with you? Where do we get these things from? Where do we and how do we determine right from wrong? Well, this is a big subject. You know, the word morality supposedly comes from a Latin word that means manner, character, proper behavior. And it's the differentiation of intentions and decisions and actions between those that are good or right and those that are bad or wrong. We all know that, right? You know, it can be a bunch of standards or principles derived from a code of conduct. We all have codes of conducts. Of course we do. You know, from particular philosophies or cultures or, you know, religions. We all have these things going on. We all do. It's very normal, don't you know? So this is sort of the definition of morality, I guess, as we know it in our society. It can come from a standard that somebody believes should be universal. You know, and again, it can be synonymous with goodness or rightness. So many recent scientific studies of morality that are widely covered in the mass media right now, you know, they claim to show that human moral choice is driven either by biological brain responses or by situational factors beyond our control. So, you know, the thing is, you know, my brain made me do it. I'm chemically imbalanced and I couldn't help myself. Right? That's what a lot of, you know, scientists are coming out with these days. But I think we have all done things that I don't know if you might call them immoral decisions. We all have our little dirty little secrets, and things. But have you ever kept quiet or lied about something or have told others lies with good intentions? Well, it's much of the time because we don't want to hurt someone else's feelings. We don't want to be the bad guy to tell someone what they should know. And lots of times we give ourselves and others a pass on that. Because, you know, some people who are blatantly truthful to the point of hurting someone's feelings, they don't care. They come off harsh and sometimes disgusting to us. So we've all told white lies for a good reason, we always say. And, you know, it's funny because I think we're all exposed to ethical dilemmas as early as grade school, right? Do you remember seeing the bullies teasing other kids and kind of feeling bad for those kids? Did you tell the teacher? Did you stick up for the other kid? Or were you kind of afraid of being a tattletale so you wouldn't get teased by the bully? So you wouldn't get teased by others as, oh, you're that wuss, you know? You didn't do anything. So, you know, as we grow up, the challenges get more difficult, especially in the social media, especially today. I mean, I think last night I heard about three stories of people who suffered from someone else putting false, humiliating information about them on the internet. And other people who knew about it didn't come forward for their own fear of slander. So, you know, today we're going to be talking about a lot of things that have to do with morality. Is our society less moral in general? Is it? Or does it just seem that way? Because, yeah, we have the instant exposure to, okay, guys, I'm just going to roll it out for you. Lying politicians, duh. Celebrity deceptions, who cares? And internet blackmail and all that going on. So we're going to find out from my special guest today. Ann Colby, Bill Damon. They've written a very important book that represents a shift in our understanding of moral development. And I'm going to tell you how you can get hold of the book at the end of the show. It's entitled The Power of Ideals, The Real Story of Moral Choice. And it sort of teaches us in fresh ways how a meaningful life with morality and caring for others develops. You know, how do these things develop? Where do they come from? So let me just give you a little bio. I'm going to give you the short version because my authors are amazing, amazingly busy scholars, authors, well-respected people. So William is a professor of education at Stanford University and senior fellow at the Hoover Institution on War, Revolution, and Peace. He's an author of 18 books, including Greater Expectations. Hope you guys have checked that one out. His research has also been covered in many national publications, including the Boston Globe, New York Times, USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, and on and on. So maybe I shouldn't keep going on here because I really want to get some information for you guys and, you know, so they can talk about the book. And by the way, his consulting professor, that's Ann Colby, at Stanford University. And previously, she was senior scholar at the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching and director of the Murray Research Center at Harvard University. She's the author of 9 books, including Rethinking Undergraduate Business Education, on and on. Her research has been covered in national publications, such as the Chronicle of Higher Education, New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. So without further ado, welcome to the show, guys. It's so nice to have you on the air with me here on the couch.
Are you there?
Thank you. Hi.
Glad to be here.
Oh, yeah, we're glad to be here.
Oh, it's great that you guys are both on the same line. Makes my life a lot easier.
Good.
Thanks so much for calling in early. And you know what? I love this subject. I love the study of moral psychology because it's very difficult sometimes to decipher what that is. And also, as a psychologist, to, you know, I always weigh both sides. I mean, yes, there are rules set down by religions and cultures, but sometimes there are mitigating circumstances that, I don't know. Can we say that was moral or immoral? So maybe we can first talk about whoever wants to answer this. The study, the field of moral psychology, what does that focus on, basically?
Well, I'll give a shot at that.
All right, you give a shot.
Of course, a lot of the most important decisions that we make in life, the fundamental choices about how we direct our efforts and energies and either resist temptation or go for pursuing big goals, these are moral choices.
Mm-hmm.
And moral psychology is an attempt to understand that, to understand how people come to make those choices, what motivates them, and turning to the application to education, once we understand this, how can we help young people or people of any age make the kinds of choices that they eventually will feel really good about, to feel that, yes, this is the kind of person I want to be, this is the kind of life I want to lead,
mm-hmm.
I am proud of the choices I made.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer. It certainly is. And, in your book, The Power of Ideals, you talk about how the new science, or the popular attitude in moral psychology says that our moral impulses are a product of biology and evolution. I kind of mentioned that at the beginning of the book, you know. I think a lot of psychiatrists I work with tend to say those things because they're dealing with chemical imbalance and, you know, certain brain functions, which may be not functioning at a, quote, normal, unquote, level. Well, why do you think that there's a problem with this belief, guys?
Well, you know, as you said, there is a real story of biology there, and certainly biological brain impulses have an influence. But it's trendy these days to say that's all there is. We are just a product of our emotions. Our behavior is driven by wired-in brain circuits, by hormones, by biological emotions. And the reason it's a problem is that it takes the responsibility away from us. It takes the power of choice. It takes agency out of the picture. And, of course, that's not only a very dispiriting message, it's also a dangerous one. If everyone just believed that they don't have any control over anything they do, it's back to the law of the jungle. Nobody would ever try to do any better.
Yeah,
I think just to add to that, the idea that people are, they're in a sense almost puppets of things that they have no awareness of, that they're not conscious of, it can either be sort of brain processes or kind of implicit emotions, or it can be situational kinds of things too. And that's been something that social psychologists have studied for a long time, that sort of the pressures of a situation are driving your behavior. And so all of these things give the picture of the person as there's in a sense no moral core of a person there, no moral agency. They're not seen as really making real choices, but are in fact dragged around by either impulses in the brain that they're not aware of, or situational contingencies that they're not aware of. And all these are irrational from this point of view, that none of our processes of moral choice and behavior are based in thinking and understanding and making real choices.
Yeah, those are great responses, you know. Sometimes, you know, we have a dilemma, and I say we as psychologists, because there's, and you probably already know about this, there's a category of disorders, I just thought I'd throw this out to you guys, they're called the Axis 2 Cluster Bs, and what that means is they're personality disorders which have certain characteristics in them that there is sort of a missing chip of empathy, a moral compass. It's just not there. It's not done, let's just say, purposefully, necessarily. They can't define or find the brain part that's not really functioning well in that. Medications usually don't help, unless they're benzodiazepines to chill people out, you know. But I mean, basically what they're saying is these personality disorders, they just have no moral compass and they just can't help themselves.
So, well, you know, there is a line of research that's actually looked into brain damage of some people, and you're right, it's found that, some people with certain kinds of brain damage do lack the capacity for basic moral responses like empathy, but a lot of people who lack empathy later in life have learned to be that way. They were born with the capacity, like most people in our species without brain damage are born with a capacity for empathy, and life has taught them the wrong lessons. They've run into a lot of hostile people, they've interpreted it that way, and so a lot of the cases of non-empathic people that you see, and there are plenty of them, are people who started out on the right track and who just have drifted off course and learned the wrong lessons.
Well, that makes sense. You know, it sure does. By the way, in case you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guests today, Ann Colby, Bill Damon. They have written a very important book. It represents a shift in our understanding of moral development. We're talking about your morals, guys, your moral compass, and what does that mean? The book's called The Power of Ideals, The Real Story of Moral Choice. We're just trying to find how a meaningful life with morality and caring for others develops as well here. So those are some of the new attitudes, you know, that we hear. Our moral impulses are a product of biology and evolution. And, you know, this is what a lot of research is showing. However, there is other research showing that, like you said, you know, William, we are born with it. We have that sense of morality. And I just read the baby bunny. I don't know if you guys read that one. The baby and the orange bunny and the green bunny experiment this morning.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, so the baby really little bitty, has the choice of who the good bunny is and the bad bunny, and chooses the good bunny, not based necessarily on their survival, but their choice of who is a better bunny. That's as good as I can put it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, it's true that I think one of the things that's been a positive influence of evolutionary psychology in this domain is that we've come to understand that certain kinds of moral impulses that are positive ones, at least the potential for these, including empathy, mm-hmm. Are built into the species. And so we all, except if there are some real pathologies, like you mentioned, which is not that common, have the potential to be empathic, compassionate, caring, and so on. Mm-hmm. But all of these kinds of capacities that come and fairness as well, as you can even see it, versions of this in animals. But all of these capacities have to be shaped and developed over time, mm-hmm. and they're very much intertwined with our moral understanding as they develop over time.
Yes.
So when you understand someone else's point of view better, when you understand that maybe you can even care about people who aren't in your immediate family, mm-hmm. and so on. These are things that take time and cognitive development and the development of understanding mm-hmm. to fully emerge.
And as long as the brain is still alive, it can learn.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I think is really important to emphasize, is that it's never too late to work out a finer sense of right and wrong, a sense of contributing to the world, a sense of becoming the kind of person that you want to be. And people do this all through life. Mm-hmm. And it's never a good idea to give up on anybody either. People have been shown, even young people who have really gotten off to the wrong start, have been shown to come under somebody's positive influence, somebody takes them under their wing, and they turn around. They become really decent, great people.
Yeah, it's so true. I agree with you. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about the influence that social media has, you know, on all of us now, of course, and the internet in general. How much do you think that those factors have influenced our beliefs about the moral decay of our society, as we say?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the media in general, it's not just social media mm-hmm. and the internet, but journalists, basically, for some reason really love this message that things are driving us that we don't know about, mm-hmm. that we're being controlled by things outside our own awareness. And I think maybe the reason they like this work so much is that it's counterintuitive. You are surprised by it. It seems like news in that way. Mm-hmm. So they love to pick up on these things. Mm-hmm. But they don't take the next step, which is that insofar as we are being controlled by things outside of ourselves and not taking our own sort of moral agency and moral active role, that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the question is not, are there biases that sometimes affect our behavior mm-hmm. outside our awareness, but can you learn to pay attention to those biases and to mm-hmm. overcome them so that you're acting, in a way that you want to act and believe you should act, rather mm-hmm. than being driven around by unconscious biases? I mean, you can see there's been a lot of news about implicit racism in mm-hmm. society and some police departments and so on. We don't just say, oh, they're dragged around by these, you know, biases and assumptions, so end of story, that's okay.
Sure.
We say, how can people learn to be aware of what's driving them and make some choices themselves with a sense of agency about those choices.
And, of course, the Internet and social media are an enormous catalyst. They send these messages out worldwide instantly.
Oh, yes.
And they can send all kinds of messages out. And to the extent they send out ill-informed messages or messages that are not very productive, that's damaging. That's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the upside is that the Internet and social media also have the capacity to spread the good word around. And so it's a tool. It's an instrument, a very powerful one. And
yes,
we hope that it will be used for the right purposes.
We hope.
Well, it'll for sure be used in
right.
both good and bad ways.
Well,
and
that's
so
true.
I think it's another case where individual people have to take control.
Yes.
And say, I am actually influenced by the situations I put myself into,
yep.
the kinds of things that I read,
yeah.
the things that I pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually, I am choosing
That's
the
right.
situations that are then influencing me.
Right.
So let me make the kinds of choices that
exactly.
are going to influence me in the direction that I want to go in.
Exactly. We have to take responsibility for what things we're focusing on and believing. You know,
Right. Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, today, guys, I'm talking about your morality. Come on. What's going on with that? Are you guilty a lot? Do you feel badly about things you've done or choices you've made? Well, today we're talking about where those choices or, you know, where our ideals come from. And my guests are Ann Colby and Bill Damon. They've written a really good book. It's called The Power of Ideals, The Real Story of Moral Choice. And, you know, we're going to find out how a meaningful life with morality and caring for others develops. And they've also shared stories about six exceptional moral leaders. And we'll be talking about those folks in just a little bit and what made up their positive qualities and what made them choose to do what they did. I'm also going to open up, speaking about social media, internet here. I'm going to give you my straighttalkdoc@gmail.com email. I always give out straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. If you have any questions for my special guest today, if you want to share deep, dark secrets, we love it. Because we're social media. No, just kidding. You know, if you have any serious questions about, you know, morality or your moral dilemmas, we'd love to hear that as well. So you both were just talking about the importance of being truthful with ourselves and others as a positive character, really asking ourselves, you know, and taking responsibility with what we focus on. So let's talk about some of the virtues. Truthfulness with ourselves. You also talk about the importance of virtue of humility. And I know it's sort of a no-brainer question, but really, truly, why is that so important?
Well, let me start by just saying what it is and what it isn't.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think that humility is saying, oh, I'm not important, I'm not very good, basically self-deprecating
right.
kinds of things.
Right.
And in fact, that's not at all what we mean by humility. What we mean by humility is that, in a sense, you see yourself as the equal of other people. You don't see yourself as above them, and you don't see yourself as below them. You understand yourself the way you really are, but rather than constantly focusing on yourself, you focus outside yourself on other people, on what you're trying to accomplish, and so on. So you're not completely obsessed with your own standing in the world. You're thinking about what you're accomplishing and about what other people need, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you become a great leader, a highly acclaimed person, as the individuals in our study were,
mm-hmm.
you don't think that you're fundamentally different from other people.
Right.
You have a respect for people at all levels and mm-hmm. all kinds of situations.
Uh-huh. That's a great definition. It sure is.
If people are interested in learning a little bit more about how we think about humility, talking about the Internet and online kinds of things,
yeah.
We worked with the folks at the 92nd Street Y in New York mm-hmm. to create a humility quiz. It's not meant as a serious test, but it's meant as a way to illustrate some of the points that Anne just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody can take this. It's free. It's fun to take. All you do is Google 92Y humility quiz, and you'll see a bunch of items, and then we explain at the end why it is that certain items illustrate exactly what we mean by humility, and others are off base, or not what we mean by humility.
Right.
The importance of humility, let me just say a little bit about that. Without humility, we aren't open-minded to the views of other people because we think we're right all the time.
Sure. Well, yeah.
And without humility, we don't look at our own weaknesses, and so how are we going to be able to improve and continue growing?
That's true.
And so the idea of humility is that you're able to really, truly, deeply respect other people and learn from them all the time.
Yes.
And the kind of person who takes that attitude toward life, let me be open-minded in a serious way, let me be understand where I could improve without just berating myself and becoming depressed about it, those are the kind of people that keep growing.
Yes.
And so that's why it's so important.
Wow, it's really true. And talking about, you know, on that the humility quiz, you can kind of get a little feel for, you know, how much maybe narcissism do you have? Are you, you know, balancing the fact that, you know, and acknowledging others and appreciating others? Or, again, is it all about you? Which leads me to, you know, sort of an obvious question. There's a lot of actors and musicians and novelists and many other artists who, in a way, are, you know, they are creative geniuses, such as yourselves, you know, you're scholars and you share a lot of study and information with people. So how can we have self-awareness of those gifts and awareness of our genius and try to hone, you know, kind of hold down that that narcissism, hone in on a little more humility? How do we...
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And even beyond self-awareness, even beyond having a sense of all the talents that you have, a lot of the people you mentioned have a lot of ego, and they use it. They, in some ways, you need a certain amount of ego to step out there on the stage and perform or to be a leader. You need to put yourself out there and at least have a lot of confidence in your abilities.
Right.
And that's one of the maybe seeming paradoxes of real humility, of authentic humility, is that you do own your talents. You own your sense of who you are and what you believe in, too. There's a lot of confidence in your dedication to high, noble ideals, and you don't really have a lot of doubt about those. But at the same time, and here's really the key, at the same time you have some sense of perspective on your life and on yourself, and you don't really think ever that you're the final answer, that you have all the answers, that you're God's gift to the world. You have a sense that here I am, I'm doing the best I can, I'm doing a good job, I certainly deserve to put myself out there, but in the end, like everybody else, I'm putting my grain of sand in the pile, I hope it's in the right direction, and I'll listen to other people if I'm on the wrong track.
Sure.
I'll learn. I'll be open-minded to that.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that happens sometimes with these people that fits into the idea of humility, and people probably can relate to this, experiencing it in their own life. So you're sort of going along, and then some really good stuff happens, and maybe you get some, you know, recognition or something, and you think, oh, well, I'm pretty cool, you know, and all that. And then you realize that you're doing that, you're aware of it, and you start laughing at yourself.
Right.
So it's kind of like, let's keep it in perspective, guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of attitude. And I think everyone, no matter how acclaimed a musician or an actor or a novelist, they can laugh at themselves. They can put it in perspective if they if they want to. And if they don't, if they really truly are just ego-driven, mm-hmm. In the long run, they're not going to be, for sure they're not going to be happy. They're probably not going to have good relationships, and they may not even continue to do well in their chosen art.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Exactly. It's sort of like, you know, you have to be somewhere in the middle of the poles. Like you said, William, you need the ego. You know, the other end would be having a total lack of confidence. Somehow, you know, you have to be in the middle to recognize the gifts you can share, but also lack a delusions of grandeur, you know.
Right, yeah.
Sure. Anyway, guys, thank you so much out there for emailing me. There are some questions that are coming in, but I do want to touch on one of the other factors that you say is really important in, you know, recognizing the concept of morality. By the way, the email address is straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And we'll get to you a couple of questions in just a little bit, guys, so... you also talk about the importance, you know, of having faith besides truthfulness, besides humility. But you talk about having faith to influence our morals. So are you talking about religion, or do we have to be religious, or what's that about?
Well, religion, of course, is one great source of faith, but it's not the only one, and we're not talking only about religious faith. We're talking about faith in something that you really believe in, and you can have faith in science, for example. But faith really gives you that staying power. It helps you endure a lot of the inevitable ups and downs in life. And it gives you a commitment. It gives you some sense that there's something that you can dedicate yourself to and you can rely on that's bigger than you, that's beyond the self, that's transcendent in some way. Mm-hmm. And yes, religious faith is certainly a great source of that for lots of people. For other people, they have faith in other things. But without faith, you really drift towards cynicism, towards nihilism, really, towards a sense that of despair, and that's not a road to anywhere.
Yeah. Our good friend, the psychiatrist George Valiant, said that the opposite of faith is not atheism but nihilism, and I thought that was a really great way to put it.
That is a great way to put it. Again, you don't necessarily have to be religious to have these core values. You know, it's just...
You have to have something to believe in, or what are you going to ground your life on, and how can you avoid just complete despair?
Right, exactly. And I think that's a really important thing, like your psychiatrist friend, that we really try to encourage people to have some kind of faith. Again, you have to be hopeful. You know, one of the definitions of people who are completely devastated or contemplating suicide is the lack of hope. You know, so we have to instill hope for the future, the possibility that you can, in many ways, take responsibility for some of the choices that you would like to make in your life to further goals of happiness or a peaceful life or that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
exactly.
You know, those are really important things.
Yeah.
All right. I'd like to. Would it be okay if I just read an email that just sort of jumped out here from someone?
Sure.
And I think it's, you know, it's very sweet of her to be completely honest. And it looks like her name is Janice or Janice. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, and I hope I pronounced it okay otherwise. But it says, I feel badly about a situation that I witnessed recently. A very good male friend of mine has been with a sort of girlfriend of his for a long time. However, I saw him out in public showing a lot of affection to this other woman who I don't know. I have a moral dilemma here. Should I tell the girl who he's been with? Or do I keep it quiet because the guy has been a good friend of mine for a very long time? Whoa, that's a moral dilemma right there.
That's right.
I wonder why she doesn't think first of talking to him.
Well, right. That's what I, you know, that's right. That's exactly right. I would say, what are you doing? Why are you doing this?
Right.
Maybe she has, and she didn't explain that to us, and he gave a goofy explanation and whatever. So,
well, I think what I would say is here's a person who really thinks about the moral choices that she makes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our point. That's one of our biggest points is that people think, and they should think, and that's the basis for moral choice, rather than just saying, you know, I'm driven by these things that are outside my consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great example of somebody who's saying, I'm trying to be self-aware, I'm trying to think this through, I'm trying to ask open-mindedly what other people think and make a decision based on that.
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer. And thank you so much, Janice or Janice, for emailing us. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, good luck with it.
Yeah, good luck with that. We really appreciate that. We have another email, which is fascinating to me, but I'll get to that in just a little bit. Talking about the three core values, in your book, The Power of Ideals, you share some stories about six exceptional moral leaders. I loved reading that because I love biographies. I love reading about people like Nelson Mandela and Jane Addams and Eleanor Roosevelt, some of the other leaders. I won't be a spoiler alert here, so you guys can really pick up on some of these other exceptional people. But what are some of the positive qualities or characteristics of these amazing leaders, which made them so great?
One of the things is, and this applies to the three people you just mentioned, mm-hmm. totally, is that they kept learning and growing throughout their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And each of them began life with characteristics that they later transcended in a lot of ways. Jane Addams, early in her life, wrote in her diary, quote, "how purposeless and without ambition I am."
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of a depressed young lady.
Mm-hmm.
But through reading and work in her social work, through really thinking through what mattered to her and committing herself to it, she became a world leader and
mm-hmm.
won a Nobel
mm-hmm.
Prize even.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson Mandela was a very angry young man who was angry for a good reason, but he had some violent tendencies that
yes.
later in life he overcame and
oh, yes.
became a symbol of forgiveness
mm-hmm.
and good harmony for the world. He set an example of harmony for the world.
Mm.
And Eleanor Roosevelt, too, she really grew a lot in the course of her life through just a determination not to be complacent, not to ever stop challenging yourself and asking yourself, am I really doing the best I can, and is my life really, really directed by the best, most truthful ideals.
Mm.
So all these people kept growing and learning throughout their whole lives.
Yes. You know, that's true. I mean, that you are so right. It's, again, self-awareness, you know, defining some of these wonderful, you know, things that really help us become better or more moral people, and growing and learning. And you mentioned forgiveness and compassion. I mean, those are wonderful characteristics to help us really understand others and become better and better. And, you know, on a scale of these particular leaders, I mean, can help the world, can be wonderful examples.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, for the
world. I think Nelson Mandela, well, they're all examples
yes.
of what we're talking about, obviously.
Yeah.
That's why they're in the book. But often people talk about the situations that you go into having certain things built into them that make you the kind of person that you are
mm-hmm.
and that can have very negative influences. So there was a very famous study done by a psychologist named Phil Zimbardo at Stanford who put people into a pretend, undergraduate students into a pretend prison, and made some of them guards and some of them prisoners, and they all did very, very badly, and it just didn't go well at all, and he ended up having to stop it. Yes. But here you have Nelson Mandela, who went into a real prison, and a very bad one, for 27 years, and rather than that experience, that dehumanizing, brutal experience,
yes, yes,
making him either despairing or brutal himself, mm-hmm, and self-protective, mm-hmm, he was able to take control, mm-hmm, and say, I've got ideals, I've got goals, and
yes,
I got to keep my eye on that the whole
yes
time,
yes,
and figure out how to keep working toward these things, even in the situation that seems like it would be impossible. And because he was able to stay focused on that, he was able to actually build some power base even while he was in prison, and to not become bitter.
Yes.
To come out of prison with this astonishing, miraculous lack of bitterness.
Oh, yes. You know, so many religious and wonderful leaders, really do they hold to their own morality within, and that this is what they teach is that strength of forgiveness,
right,
and understanding, and mm-hmm, you know, basically just allowing people to do what they need to do, but showing through example what is the right thing to do.
Right.
We have an interesting email. This is from Justin. And this is sort of touching on that in terms of, I guess, lying. I was going to ask you how we can find the moral character within ourselves to have better moral qualities, but I'll just throw this out there. And thanks so much for writing in, Justin. It starts off, my therapist told me that. Okay, I'm in trouble now. We always
blame the therapist.
That's right. My therapist told me that I learned how to tell a lot of white lies when I was a child in order to keep my mom from abusing me and my younger brother. She was a single parent and an alcoholic. I'm now in my late 20s and find myself still telling white lies to people because I don't ever want to hurt them. I always am a people pleaser and want to walk on eggshells, but I don't like myself for that. Am I an immoral person? Oh, Justin.
Well, I can answer that question, that last question, immediately, which is no.
No.
And in fact, we would very, very rarely, if ever, call somebody an immoral person.
Yes.
All of us are capable of doing things that are less than moral.
Yes.
And that has to do with behaviors and wrong choices that we make. But it doesn't speak to the kind of people we are.
Right.
But you know, I think that this is a very well-intentioned and self-reflective insight that he's expressed about how you can have the best intentions for things, but they're not served well by dishonest means.
Yes.
Including even if you're really trying to make people feel good, if you're in the end not doing that in a truthful way, somehow it always turns around and it either lacks in the long run the credibility or ends up having a lot of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. And so what we write about a lot in The Power of Ideals, in our book The Power of Ideals, is how important it is to be rigorous about not just the goals you have, but about the means.
Yes.
And make sure that the means towards those ends are as moral as the goals are.
But you know, I want to add that
yeah,
we're not really saying, and we have a whole chapter on truth, and it deals with this question of things that are, in a sense, just courtesies or social conventions. If somebody says, how are you, and you don't feel great and you don't want to get into it right then, oh, I'm fine, that's not really lying.
Yes.
And I think if, you know, it requires some judgment, but we're not saying you have to go out and
right
tell everybody exactly what's on your mind, regardless of how unnecessary that is or whether it's going to hurt them. It's more that, you know, if somebody asks you a serious question or you have the opportunity to give someone feedback or talk to them and so on. When in doubt, tell the truth.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't mean you have to go out of your way to tell somebody, let's say somebody already bought some clothing that they can't take back and they ask you what you think, you don't have to say that looks incredibly bad, you should throw it away right now. You can just say, it's not really my taste, but I hope you enjoy it, or something like that.
Yeah, there is a room for tact, and
and
there's a room for, you know, telling little kids that there is such a thing as Santa Claus. And, I mean, there are a lot of legitimate times when you say less than the absolute ruthless truth. But as Anne said, I think that sometimes that drifts into self-deception and goes beyond just simple tact. And in that case, it is important to always examine yourself and say, is it really necessary for me not to tell the whole truth in this case?
Or I think sometimes people can use this sort of thing to avoid engaging in a more authentic way in relationships.
Right.
And if you can learn to do it well, even being able to express things that aren't maybe 100% what the person wants to hear can really strengthen and build a relationship and lead it to be more authentic and more satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, it serves your self-interest as much as it serves your desire to be a good person.
Those are great points, Anne and William. And by the way, Justin, thank you so much for having the courage to email us and share this with us. And by the way, you've hit on the first most important thing is insight. It sounds to me like you have, gotten insight as to why you do tell white lies, probably out of mental survival in many situations. But you might check out, ask your therapist about some assertiveness training. As Anne said, you learn how to say things honestly, share your truth, but, in an assertive and yet not aggressive manner. You don't have to be aggressive to get your point across or to share your truth with other people, and you don't have to tell lies. And also self-esteem training might be great for you as well, to learn that you didn't deserve that treatment that you grew up with, and necessarily, that you and your brother are not now victims because you're adults. So you have the choice to empower yourselves and be better people. And if you choose to have kids, you will be those wonderful parents to those kids from what you've learned. So thanks, Justin, so much for emailing us. We appreciate it. By the way, guys, we're running out of time here. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing little tidbits about your book, The Power of Ideals, The Real Story of Moral Choice. It's Anne Colby and William Damon. Where is the best way to find your book? How can we get it and find out more about both of you?
Well, one very easy way is Amazon. It's certainly there and easy to get. Just look for The Power of Ideals or either of our names, William Damon or Anne Colby. And I have a website, williamdamon.com. It's available on that. And other online sources, if you just Google the title of the book, it'll come up under the publisher's name, under lots of other places.
It's Oxford University Press. I want to put in a plug for local independent bookstores, which if they aren't carrying it, you can suggest that they should, and you can get them to order it for you.
And there's also a link to it, too, if you take that humility quiz. Googling 92Y humility quiz, there's a link to the book on that humility quiz.
What a great idea. I think that's a lot of interest. That's fun, too, because it gives you a little bit gives you a little bit of insight.
Thanks. It is meant to be fun and amusing.
Yes,
and,
sure.
Informative.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for being such great guests on the show. I sure appreciate it and all that you do for others in all of your other books, and this one in particular, The Power of Ideals.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right.
Yeah.
Take good care now.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, guys, and you can, of course, get their book, and I'll have all that information up again in the archives tomorrow right here on my webpage on LA Talk Radio. Hope you had a great day listening, and just sort of think about some of the things we talked about your own moral character. What is morality? Do you have to tell those white lies anymore? Or can you just learn how to say it? Learn and be your truth. All right, Dr. Michelle here. Had a great day. Thank you so much for your emails, guys, and for sharing. Sorry I didn't get to all of you, but next week you'll have a chance to do so as well. We always encourage you to. As I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others, and that's the way it works. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.